911, what's your emergency?
Girl, the wave.
You, like, came out swinging with that. And, like, you were, like, so, like, like demure about it. You're like, you know, I have one idea. It's not great. I'm just going to float it by you. And, like, in my mind, I was like...
Yeah, I thought it was bad.
I had a bad idea where it was just going to be like, 911, what's the emergency? Glug, 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 glug. Are you okay? But, like, this one was way funnier.
Yeah, yours kind of makes me feel like you're, like, a fish that I'm talking to.
Right. Hey, Dory. Dory.
Dory. Dory does come up in this episode.
And I... I have something to say about that exchange, but we'll get to that when we get to it.
Do you have to say, Christopher, don't you know Ellen is canceled?
But today we are talking about the long-awaited, at least long-awaited for me, I've been dying to talk about this one for months. This is finally, guys, finally the tsunami arc. Are we excited?
I'm pretty excited, and I think our listeners are excited. I've seen people, you know, say to us on Twitter, like, I'm so excited for you to cover the tsunami arc. Sorry we took a week off. This is our second episode we've recorded that, like, we still, as of recording this, haven't released our next episode. Like, we're still technically on podcast hiatus. But hey, we're still working. And yeah, today's episode is season 3, episode 2, Sink or Swim. Directed by Bradley, mononym, written by Juan Carlos Cotto, who of course did Dosed and Broken, and then several more episodes throughout the show.
Like, just puts out banger after banger after banger. We love Juan Carlos Cotto on this show. And we love Bradley,
Bradley.
On this show as well.
We love Bradley.
I need to, like, Google how to pronounce his last name at some point, because we can't keep...
It's better if we just start referring to him as, like, a Beyonce or a Cher. You know, that's just Bradley.
Adele. Yeah, Bradley.
Shout out to Adele, known 911 fan.
Yes. Shout out to Adele, my birthday twin.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Love it.
I just had my birthday. I think I mentioned this on the last episode, but I turned 25 recently, which means Adele also just had her birthday. So go wish Adele a happy birthday wherever you can find her. I don't think she's on Twitter.
A belated birthday by the time this episode is out.
A belated birthday by today. I mean, we're recording this on, like, what is this? The 14th, I think it is.
Yep.
So today the episode begins... Tsunami begins. Buck, it's kind of like a little bit of a picking up where we left off, kind of like a few steps behind.
Yeah, this is an interesting opening because it's kind of like showing us like a replay of some of the things that happened at the end of the last episode. But then they also have expanded on some of the things, like we're seeing new footage of some things. Yeah, we get, like, Buck and Christopher on the rides again, but then we get kind of an expanded view of when Buck gets distracted looking at the first responders rescuing the guy in the dinosaur suit. We see a little more of that, and we actually see that one of the paramedics is Lena Bosco, played by Ronda Rousey, of all people, who will be a bit of a character in this season, and this is our first time seeing her.
Ronda Rousey's first episode on 911 as Lena Bosco, which will lead to the funniest and also personally what would be the most rage-inducing moment on the show for me if I were Buck. But that'll come later. and we also see a couple of snippets with this like teenage girl. She's on the pier and she's getting sketched by this like caricature artist or at least it looks like I'm from New York. So like the... people you see on the street drawing people are caricature artists.
I think he's just kind of like a general like boardwalk painter, not necessarily caricatures. Yeah. And it's interesting because we've got like a young teenage girl who's apparently forged this friendship with like an old guy painter on the pier, which is kind of cute. And she is flying a drone to like show him a landscape for him to sketch, basically.
Yeah, it's nice. It's so cute. But of course, the fun police comes over and is like, hey, you can't fly drones on the pier. And this is so funny. She starts negotiating. She's like, well, you are the pier commissioner. So if you say it's authorized, then it becomes authorized. And he's like, or I could call the cops. you know?
Ugh, this stupid peer cop.
She has the spirit of a politician. I see big things for her in the future. But in the immediate future, I see a very big thing, which is, of course, the crashing boom bang of a giant fucking wave.
Well, first we also see...
Oh, I got ahead of myself.
Just a little bit. First, we also see, you know, the harbor master makes her take the drone down and she bids farewell to the guy sketching. We see, I think what it's supposed to be is that, like, she thought he was just sketching the landscape that she had pulled up on the drone. And actually, we see, like, at the last minute that he's been sketching her operating the drone. And then we also see there's a boat out on the water. Mm-hmm. The harbor master is, like, telling them they're getting too close to the pier. There's a boat out there, like a little, I don't know enough about boats to know what this boat is called, but it's like a small...
It's like a dinghy yacht, I guess you could say, because it has like an interior cabin. It has mm-hmm. like a deck that you can stand on and everything. And this older couple, this older woman and this older man with the woman's adult son, they're having a marriage ceremony. The woman and the man, not the son. He's her best man.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a little animosity between the son mm-hmm. and the stepdad. It seems like the son is not crazy about his mom getting remarried.
Yeah, he's Ted Mosby, and this is Clyde singing Ode to Virginia at the wedding. And I will say, this is an interesting spot for a wedding ceremony, just because I don't think of Santa Monica Pier... Unless it's like nighttime and you're in like a coming of age movie about like, right. I want to get out of this small town, and the small town is LA.
LA. Like,
right. I don't think of it as a particularly like romantic spot. Like, you couldn't have found like a nice secluded beach somewhere, right. Or even like Malibu, just like something a little bit nicer.
Maybe they like had their first date at the Santa Monica Pier or something. Mm. You know, maybe there's an explanation for it.
Yeah, I would love to get a look into these characters' lives. If only there was like a jukebox The Ghost song we could play over like a montage of their whole like relationship and like love story. That's like very inspirational for like an underserved community. That would be great. But instead, we cut back to Buck with his little vice grip on Christopher's shirt, and you know, we saw this at the end of last episode. Hello, tsunami.
Yeah, everybody on the pier starts noticing the wave. And I want to say one of the first guys we see noticing the wave is this guy holding a big Rastafarian shark plushie. Did you notice this?
No.
He's holding like a shark plushie that's wearing like one of those like Rasta hats and dreadlocks, which I was like, that's interesting.
That's so so it's like the trans IKEA shark turned like, you know, like
slightly culturally insensitive.
Yeah, yeah. Like this is it's like non-PC like younger cousin who wants to be a mixologist in Jamaica.
Okay, don't get me wrong, I'm sure you can buy this exact plushie at somewhere at the Santa Monica Pier, or at least you could in like 2019. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was very funny.
We know for a fact that they just use, like, toys they get from, like, Toys R Us or whatever. Like,
or probably even worse, probably just, like, some drop-shipped, you know, cheap-ass plushies for those carnival prizes.
Did you see that clip that was posted on Twitter the other day where, like, I didn't even notice this watching the episode, but in one of the holiday episodes, someone, as, like, a gift for, like, the little firehouse giveaway, they hand... Bobby an Appa plush, Appa from Avatar the Last Airbender.
That was so cute.
And that was so cute. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even notice that Appa made a cameo.
Right?
So I guess maybe it's a similar thing of like, oh, I guess you can buy this offensive shark. But offensive shark is not long for... I guess maybe it is because, you know, sharks do swim. Because
this guy probably survived the episode.
He got his little friend with him, his little Jeff or whatever. The tidal wave is incoming, and everyone like they sound the alarm, they pound the alarm.
And Christopher asks,
the barbs listening. Yes, Christopher asks.
Christopher asks, where did all the water go? And it's like, it went into a giant wave that's about to kill everyone. Is the answer.
It's like, you will soon find out, my son.
Right.
And so everyone starts running, of course, like, run for your lives. And
Buck grabs Christopher like a sack of potatoes, throws him over his shoulder, of course. Because what else do you do in this situation?
He literally sort of fireman carries him, you know?
Yes, which likely thing for him to do, you know? Fork found in kitchen. Mm-hmm. And he takes Chris and kind of throws him behind. Well, that sounds more violent than it is. He puts him behind like a carnival stand and then follows him to like hide out behind this carnival stand, which like probably didn't do a lot to protect them, but I don't know. It's probably better than nothing.
Yeah. Of course, the tidal wave crashes down. I will say, this is probably the best, or some of the best CGI the show ever had, or like has ever had, you know?
Well, I think because they also incorporated a lot of practical elements, you know, for a lot of the episode, they are really in the water. So like, it's probably only those wider shots that they're using like a lot of CGI.
Yeah. And you don't really need like a whole lot of detail when you have like a wide shot like that. Like, you can cut corners and it still looks realistic. They figured out how to do like realistic water like a while ago. So I was very impressed by a lot of the technical elements of this episode, and we'll like get more into that as it goes on. But you see like the water crashing through like the harbor master's windshield, I guess you could say, and it crashes down on the pier. Title card, and then we get this amazing crazy hectic like flashes of like Buck drowning in the water. Oliver's like being tossed and turned everywhere. The editing is so like choppy and chaotic. It's really well done. There's this heartbeat sound effect that's playing the whole time, and it like it really puts you into that moment.
Shout out to Bradley.
Shout out to the folks in the editing bay. And it's like the whole team on this one, honestly. But eventually he does. It's actually a really cool way that they do it, because like he's so disoriented in the water, and they have him surface by like, it's like he's falling down into the surface of the water. And then you see that iconic shot of like Buck breathing in air as all the water is like going past him. He's like, you know.
Yes. And it was making me think about, like, you would, like, if you're just getting this huge tidal wave, you know, crashing into you, you would totally lose sense of, like, what is up and down. Like, I don't know. It was freaky. Like, I would not like being in this situation, personally.
Yeah. But then as Buck surfaces, we see that the wave, like, the reason he was under the water for so long is because the wave carried them to the fucking street.
Yeah.
The fucking street. And like the Santa Monica Pier, there's like, if anyone has played GTA 5, they know this, or if they've been to LA, I guess. But there's this huge
cliff.
They've
been there in real life.
There's this huge like cliff in front of the pier, that like there's houses below the cliff and all that stuff, and then like above it there's like the rest of the city. And so like the water, like the tide rose so high, like the water levels rose so high that it carried them up onto the street of like downtown LA proper, it seems like. I don't know geography that well, but that's what it looks like to me. And it looks like, and so like they went through the ringer just to get there. And of course he comes to, and the first thing he does is, and drink every time he does this, he yells, "Christopher! Christopher!" Yeah.
You'll die if you drink every time he does this. And he finds, miraculously, Christopher has not only survived, but like is within, you know, not that far away, and is holding on to something. He's like grabbed hold of a pole. So Buck kind of goes over to catch him. It's a very like intense scene, because like Christopher's like can't hold on to the pole, and eventually does like get unmoored from it, and Buck catches him and is so you know, worried and glad to have him, to catch him. And it's just, it's very intense, very emotional,
very intense. It reminds me, actually, okay, did you ever, I don't know if they showed this in your high school, but we had a world history class that like juniors would take. And in that, they showed, like, they talked about, like, the big tsunami in Thailand in, like, 2008, I want to say it was.
Oh, we did learn about that a little bit.
Yeah, and they showed us this, like, mini-series. There was, like, this, like, prestige mini-series about, like, the tsunami in Thailand. And there's this, like, harrowing storyline with this little girl that's, like, lost from, like, separated from her parents during it. And that's, like, what this was giving to me. I was, like, getting so high school flashbacks. It was harrowing. It was like, I was like so worried for him. He missed his hand the first time, but eventually he catches him. They get on top mm-hmm. of this like this fire truck belonging to the 136, which will be important.
Yes.
But they get him back. Oliver is just doing fantastic. Like, I don't know how to describe it other than like disaster acting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. He has to do a lot of intensity in these two episodes.
The panicking, the physicality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, there's so much action. I was noticing in this scene especially, like, there's just not a lot of dialogue. Like, we're really just seeing a lot of action happening. And, mm-hmm. yeah, he has to act very, you know, scared, disoriented, passionate, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot.
As he's pushing up Chris onto the fire truck, I like what they do here. They have like environmental obstacles for him, where this crazy debris, like this heavy debris comes by and like it's like in his path, and so he has to duck under the water, and mm-hmm. it smashes into the fire truck like on its path, and then like he comes up again. It's like this little moment of like, oh my god, is Buck gonna be able to surface at all? Like, this is like mm-hmm. moments of like mini tension just really add to the overall thing. I think it's super well
yeah.
done.
Yeah, but they both get up on the truck, and like for the moment they're safe. Mm-hmm. Which then we get a classic, we get a big sweeping shot of flooded LA, which I thought was cool. And then we get a classic 911 moment 20 minutes before first wave.
Yeah.
They love to do the little skipping around on the timeline.
Also love how ominous that is. How ominous that is. The first wave.
The first, right. That's also some foreshadowing. But Athena mm-hmm. and May are getting their nails done at the salon. Mm-hmm. And we hear that May is applying to colleges and she seems really stressed out. She's like, I still need all these letters of rec and I haven't finished any applications. I remember this time, man. Oh, it's not fun. Yeah.
College essays. Did you see that thread? I think we mentioned this on Twitter. We mentioned this like on the pod, but like someone on Twitter was talking about how like Americans are so crazy that they have to like basically tell you everything horrible that's happened in their lives in order to get into college. Mm-hmm. And so May's like struggling with that. Cause like, what am I going to write about? Oh, mm-hmm. if only there was an episode of like a TV show that I'm on that would provide me with the perfect thing to write about for college.
Right. Right. So May and Athena get into the car. May's still mm-hmm. stressing out about like what to do for her essay when suddenly a car crashes into them. High drama. And mm-hmm. then we get the 118 are responding to a call, which mm-hmm. first of all, Hen asks Eddie, any word on how Operation Buck Up Buck is going? So that's, you know,
incredible.
Love that. Mm-hmm. And of course, Eddie shows her like a picture of Buck and Christopher like getting breakfast earlier in the day and like, oh, they're thinking of seeing a movie. So it doesn't seem like anyone knows that they're on the pier, because obviously that would kind of change everybody's reaction mm-hmm. to everything in this episode. But it's just so like, I can't believe we're literally on Eddie's second season of the show, like only like his 19th or 20th episode. And he already is so married to Buck and they are co-parenting so hard. Like, the fact that he's like single-handedly responsible for quote unquote Operation Buck Up Buck and his child is with Buck and they're like exchanging pictures. It's just insane. I'm sorry.
Here's
and like,
a picture,
you know, somebody
of our
had
son
to say it.
Eating breakfast. Somebody We're going to go say, see like, a movie. Like,
like, listen, remember season 2, episode 17, before Shannon died, we were getting like, oh, they're FaceTiming and Shannon and Chris are out getting ice cream. And mm-hmm. and Eddie's like, oh, he's going to have a sugar rush, you know. And then in this episode, mm-hmm. it's like, Buck and Christopher are out for breakfast. Eddie's like, he's gonna get a sugar rush. I'm sorry. Buck is momming him so hard right now. And Eddie baby trapped him so hard. It's just bananas.
It's incredible. And that's like a little brief moment at the 118. They like, I don't think the hydrant bursts yet, does it? Or okay, because we go back to
I think this is, so then water starts kind of flooding the streets, and I think Bobby asks like, did somebody leave a hydrant open? But then they hear, no, it was a tsunami, like this is from the ocean, so now they know what's up.
Meanwhile, we go back to May and Athena. This pileup mm-hmm. doesn't seem tsunami related at all. It's just like a freak thing that happened at the same time.
That's
just
a good point. Maybe like remotely it was related, but maybe like it's part of the reason that there was like maybe there was extra traffic which led to this pileup. But yeah, that's a good point. It's not actually made that clear what exactly
someone runs
caused
a light
this.
And smashes into a transformer, causes this pileup, and Athena's car.
It's like a. It's not like a pileup where like a million cars have like, you know, flipped on top of each other, but there are probably like 20 cars involved in this thing. Like, it's a big accident. Athena and May, when we cut back to them, they are trapped in the
car.
They're
trapped.
And
their car is fucked. Uh-huh.
They're trapped. They need like the they're having that thing that you need like the jaws of life for, like their doors are jammed. So Athena pulls out like one of those little hammers for breaking car windows. May, of course, is like, where did you get that? And she says, from Bobby. And she breaks open the window, gets out. And yeah, we see like this aerial shot of like the 20 cars involved in this.
I know Bobby is more romantic than this, but like I would be so
that
it would
was
be
her
so
Christmas
funny.
Present.
Yeah, I was like, is that what he got Athena for her birthday? Like
that's what she got for the honeymoon.
Survival gear.
I want you to know that I really trust you and love you. So here's a tool for breaking. I mean, it is a sweet gift. Like it is, you know, it's like he wants her survival.
I mean, I guess, yeah, in the abstract, but it's like a pragmatic survival gear. That's not like it's like on the level of like, you only got me chocolates when I wanted diamonds, you know?
Okay, maybe he got her. Ooh, imagine if he got her like a diamond studded window breaking hammer.
That would be iconic. That would be the way to do
that
it.
That would be iconic. Come on, they should have at least had it be, like, bedazzled. It
has a bit of, like, opal in the handle or something.
I got this from Bobby, and May's like, why is it bedazzled? And she's like, he knows I like a little style to things, you know?
I like a little sparkle, a little flash, you know?
Actually, you know, Athena's a very tasteful woman, so I don't know if she would want, like, the bedazzled one, but I'm thinking just, like, a little diamond stud on the end that you use to break open the windows. That'd be cute. Classy.
Exactly. But it has to be a real diamond. Real diamond that has to be like worth money. That has to be like at least, you know.
And then
like
it makes sense.
Multiple carats. You know.
It makes sense because diamonds are so hard, like that would break a car window.
Yes.
So it's practical as well.
But they burst out the window and it is very chaotic. And people are squabbling. This guy is like, you know, bitching at everyone. He's like this like corporate guy. I want to call him a Wall Street guy, but he's in LA, so he's just like I guess I could say a Silicon Valley guy or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
What do they do down there? Leave a comment.
Tech stuff.
But this one lady who's in the pileup, she, you know, announces that like she tried to call 911 and they have her on hold.
Yeah.
911 has me on hold. And
it's a very help is not coming moment.
It's a very help is not coming. We have several of those because we go from that to dispatch and it's like your worst day at work ever. I know Maddie
hashtag
had her
worst day ever.
Hashtag worst day ever. Maddie already had her worst day at work ever on her first day on the job. So she's like
she's
experienced.
Had like a million worst days at work ever.
But like I just want to like I was watching this and like this is what like a Friday night dinner rush feels like. This is like food service workers unite. Because we deal with this every week. Maddie has this one guy on the phone and oh my god, this call is absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal. This guy Jonas, he's an amateur mountain climber. He claims to have summited six of the world's highest peaks. I say claims.
I love how you said he claims to, like as if he's lying.
I would never believe a man who's about to like, you know, go to the pearly, I don't know. But
this drowning man fucking lied about scaling K2.
Well, listen, that would be the mountain to lie about, but he's in his house, he's in his attic, he's trapped. No one has ever been more trapped than Jonas in this moment.
I think like, you're right. I think he kind of wins the trapped award for at least this episode, but possibly the entire show. He is trapped as fuck. Although,
yeah, water.
You know what? He wins the trapped award, and I think Buck in the season 2 finale wins the stuck award.
Definitely. Jonas is king of trapped and Buck is king of stuck. And that fits. That rhymes. It makes sense. It feels good to say. But Jonas, the water is like already up to like his midsection. Like he's in his attic. He's in the highest part of his house he can be. And Maddie, you know, believe it or not, she has protocols for this. 911 has protocols for this. Getting out of your attic when you're, I don't want to say trapped again. When you're stuck. When you're stuck. And so he finds some of his amateur climbing gear, and there's a hatchet, a very small axe.
Yeah.
In it. And it's like, well, it's this or the water. So she has him go, and like instead of like trying to like bust through his roof, which is like you'd need a chainsaw, she has him find a roof vent and try and get at the sides of it to you know, presumably like dislodge it and swim to freedom.
Right.
It doesn't work. His axe breaks immediately.
His axe breaks. Yeah, immediately. Not what you want an axe to do. I'm like, did he get, sorry to make light of such a like bleak scene, but did he get this axe on Temu or something?
No, literally, this is like
a Shein axe.
This is a Shein axe. Like this is like
AliExpress all the way.
He got like a fandom axe on Etsy and expected it to function regularly. Like watch it be like for like some obscure sci-fi show from like, you know, the 90s that like 50 people go to a con meetup every year for.
But yeah, his hatchet breaks, and okay, I am really not trying to like victim blame or judge this guy who tragically drowns in his own house, but I do always think it's kind of wild that like that happens and then he just like makes no other attempt to like, because he's next to this vent, he was trying to break out through this vent, and I was thinking like I would just try and get some leverage somehow and just like start kicking at it, you know, or something, because it kind of looks like it's almost just like a thick window or something. I'm sure like in real life I probably would not have the faculties to do all that, and like I'm sure there were reasons in universe that he couldn't have done all that, but he pretty much like immediately gives up and is like, I'm gonna die. And I was kind of yelling at the screen like, no, just like try a couple more things, please.
If it was Henrietta Wilson up there, she would have like found like, you know, the narrowest little like cross beam like that she could find, like floating around like in like the debris on there, and like fucking like gone at it. Like, I know what you mean. Like fished a crowbar out of nothing.
But we can't all be Henrietta Wilson.
Unfortunately. But he does, in fairness, hit at it, you know, in rage. Doesn't really seem to do anything. If this was like, you know, one of those like window AC units, it would have popped out like nothing. But I understand that maybe a roof vent might be a little bit more durable than that. So he's
he kind of just assumes that he is, yeah, that he is doomed. He seems kind of to have made his
rightfully
peace with it. Maddie, Maddie is still, you know, very upset by this, but he just kind of starts talking about the mountains he's climbed, and he's talking about like the view off of, it might be K2 that he's talking about. He's like, the view off of there, it was like looking down at the sky, and then eventually the water fills up, and Maddie just hears over the line like the bubbling and the gurgling, and then the line disconnects, and classic Maddie crying on the phone moment.
That line was like so, that line was so poetic and like beautiful. It genuinely like gave me chills. I started to cry because like of the tragedy of it. Like sometimes you need like a poetic line like that to like make you feel like the full weight of things, and I'm like, oh my god, it's like I'm there.
That's okay. I know everybody disagrees with us about liking season 8 episode 16, but one of the things I liked about it is I actually found very moving that line Bobby has in like the flashback where he's talking to the mom of the baby who died. He says something about his kids who are dead, and he says like, she's like, how do you cope with it or something, and he says like, I live in the belief that I will see them again one day. And like, I cried, you guys. And I feel like, listen, that's the magic of just like going into the episode and like taking it at its word and for what it is, because like I was along for the ride and I was very moved, and like in a good way, like I liked it.
Yeah, I fully agree.
So, you know, take me to court over it.
And you know they will. And you know they will. But Maddie, like an absolute soldier, she cries a single tear.
Yes.
Stiffens her upper lip, straightens her spine, and gets back to work.
Yeah, like a true professional.
there were so many times this episode that like they did something like absolutely harrowing, like in their job, like the 118 or Maddie, or even just like Buck, like saving people, which we'll get to, where like and then they have to immediately like brush it off and keep doing shit. And so every time that happened, I just wrote down in my notes, get back to work.
I mean, that is like one of the most impressive things about being a first responder, in my opinion, is the ability to just do something like that and then get back to work and move on to the next person. I guess it's like the handing it off thing that we have seen come back time and time again on this show. But then we go to the 118 arriving at the scene of the tsunami, essentially. And, you know, there's like a big operation going on with like a bunch of different fire departments.
I just want to say LA sucks right now. Like LA, real estate has never been worse in LA.
This is like the earthquake was one thing, but this is probably the first time on the show where I started to question, like, why would anyone ever live in LA in this universe?
It reminds me of that, like, that H Bomber guy clip where he's responding to like Ben Shapiro saying, like, if your house is on the coast and you're worried about like rising tides, just sell your house.
Just sell the house.
And then he's like, but who's one question, Ben?
Sell the houses to who?
Sell the houses to who? Fucking Aquaman.
Yeah. It does seem like Aquaman would be one of the only people who could live a sustainable life in LA in this show. At least, because it's like earthquake in the last season, plane crash in the first season, tsunami in this season. What do we get in season four? Like some other shit.
Some something. We get the zoo animals in season five. I loved that.
Yeah, that was like a ransomware attack. I think season four might be the mudslide. Actually, come to think of it, season six, you got that like freeway overpass collapse at the end of the season.
Oh, don't forget the blimp. The blimp, of course.
That was such a lame opening disaster, not to get ahead of ourselves.
No, it really was. I was so disappointed. I'm like, you're going to crash a blimp, one of 20 in existence, and you're going to make it this lame?
Yeah, like, didn't even last the whole episode, let alone three. But then, B-NATO, plane crashes all the time. Like, I would simply sell my house and move, personally.
Yeah.
I would sell it to Aquaman and leave.
I don't have to deal with this in New York. We got our big tragedy out of the way in 2001. You know, we're smooth sailing from here on out.
You're going to love, I have this line in my next video that I may or may not cut, where I'm talking about like the kind of timeline of the popularity of a certain type of movie. And I'm talking about a movie that came out in 2001. So I'm like, so what happened in 2001? Other than, you know...
You have to keep that in. You have to keep that in. Jane, you have to keep that in. I'm begging you.
Yeah, I'm hoping like it's been long enough that, you know.
It's been 24 years. It's fine, you know. What was that bit about RFK Jr.? He was like on his presidential claims, he was like trying to be like, and we will forget 9/11 or something.
Iconic thing to say.
Of all the nonsense he said.
Seriously. But the 118 here that all of the other fire departments that were like in the path of the tsunami have been accounted for, except the 136 that were at the pier when the tsunami hit. So that's kind of the information nugget we get from that scene.
And we do like a little match cut to Buck on the fire.
The
136 truck with Christopher, and you know, Buck sort of like asks him how he's sort of taking this in stride, as Christopher does, and he says, "I'll be all right. I took surfing lessons," and it's like, "Oh, callback!" But also, this is so sweet.
It's finally. Like Shannon. Maybe you should have stopped nagging Eddie about paying for the surfing lessons with money you didn't have.
Yeah, clearly they paid off, you know?
Like, yeah. Ugh, the old ball and chain, am I right?
Ugh, you know, glad that one's in the grave. But
seriously. Then
Buck hears a cry for help. Also, drink every time someone screams for help in this episode. I just want our listeners to like be on the floor by the time this one's done.
Yeah, there are a lot of moments in this one. Yeah, Buck finds a survivor calling out to him, like a woman, and he takes the ladder on top of the truck and starts using that to kind of, you know, extending it and using it to travel across the water. He gets the hose, the curled up hose.
It's so good to see Buck and ladders reconciling in this way. You know, I know they
exactly. He's like kind of making it up to the
exactly. It's like they went through some difficult times, but like they're working together, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's a good point. Like subliminally, this is him overcoming his fire truck related trauma that he may have had. So he uses the ladder and he also uses the fire hose.
Hello.
Fire hose callback. this is okay. Freudian reading of this. The fire hose is obviously a phallic symbol. So
of
when
course.
He uses the fire hose to like stretch it out across the water, you could just say that symbolizes like masculine power or something.
Yeah.
This is actually a very like kind of conservative scene about like a phallic, you know, powerful masculine energy rescuing the frail woman who's in distress.
Freudianly speaking, hello, Buck is neutered at this point. He's been stripped of his job and title by his boss.
Yeah, because he's only allowed to wield the fire hose, the phallic symbol, when he's employed.
He is very literally taking his manhood into his hands. And with that, he is
so to speak,
using it to bring women and men to safety. Dare I say, this is one of the earliest signs of bi Buck.
No, you're spitting right now. You're right. Literally, he's using his phallic symbol to save both men and women. Oh my god, boom, we got it. This show is so smart, you guys.
This show
so
is
many
so
layers.
Smart. And we're smart for talking about it on a podcast.
Exactly.
Like...
exactly. The show is smart, but we're smarter. So all this to say, Buck uses the fire hose. He like kind of stretches it out across this span of water and like ties it to an anchor across the sort of, it's like, you know, between two buildings or whatever. And now he asks the woman to let go so that she can like be washed away by the wave into the fire hose so that like she can grab hold of something. And which is a pretty smart way to save people in the water in this situation. And then once he's rescued the woman and gotten her onto the top of the fire truck, Chris like points out there are a bunch of other survivors coming towards them. And so, you know, Buck's like, can you watch him for me? Which is funny for some reason.
Can you watch him while I go smoke? Like,
yeah. but, you know, Buck's like, man, this is going to be a long day. He doesn't say that. But like, if this was a stupid movie from the 80s or something, he would be like, looks like this is going to be one long day. And he goes over to help the other survivors.
Yeah. There's also like a dude trapped in a car. He promises to like come back for him and everything.
Imagine if he just forgot about that guy.
Lamau.
That guy just got washed away.
Likely thing for ADHD ass Buck to do. He like remembers
he's
as
like,
the
oh,
car.
Oh, I knew
like,
I forgot something.
Oh no, I left the stove on. Like, but I just gotta
he's
say,
like, okay, Christopher's safe. Eddie's fine. Oh shit, that guy in the car.
The thing that I was. Oh, he gets home like in bed that night. He's like, oh shit.
Damn it. No.
The thing that I was thinking about most in this scene, because like we had a moment to like stop and like take everything in, and I was thinking about the fact that like they're getting like eye and mouthfuls of this water, and this is the last kind of water you want to get eye and mouthfuls, because this is not just saline, this is not just like salt water from the sea with all kinds of excrement and bacteria and microbes in it. This is also mixed together with sewage, right? Because all of those buildings, all of those houses, the pier, they all have sewage systems. They are getting like a cocktail of the grossest things you could ever hope to find in water. It's a wonder that they didn't walk away from this with like a MRSA infection, you know?
Yeah,
like, I guess
true.
The water is like fast moving. So like, it's not like, you know, drinking from like a still like, you know, pond or something. But like, at some point, like, I had to just step back and be like, this is so icky. Ugh.
Imagine, like, on the show if Buck, like, overcame his blood clot problem, but then right as he was getting back to work, he found out he had, like, some horrible, like, flesh-eating, like, bacteria he had acquired from spending all that time in the tsunami water.
He and the dad from the last episode would have much to discuss.
True. He's like, what are you in for?
And it's just like, well, you'll never believe this. But then, you know, he saves all these people. And so we get, like, a moment to, like, breathe. And unlike Jonas... And we go back to dispatch, where Maddie is, she's sort of watching the news, and it turns out that an 8.9 Richter scale earthquake off the coast of Alaska caused the worst tsunami in 50 years. So can everyone together just collectively say, fuck you, Alaska. Fuck you, and fuck you, those Alaska. Tectonic ass plates that pushed the water down onto Santa Monica Pier and put our babies in danger.
Right, so you're not saying, like, fuck the people of Alaska, you're just saying fuck the land of Alaska.
I mean, they also elected Sarah Palin as their governor, so, like, and they have historically voted red, so I'm also too...
Well, that's only a percentage of their population.
I'm also saying fuck you, Alaska, but for the the geographical drama, I'm also saying fuck you, land of Alaska.
Well, I say shout out to any Alaskan listeners, and shout out to all the moose, you know?
Hey, shout out. The moose are blameless in this.
Exactly. But Maddie is at the dispatch, and she sees Linda struggling with a similar call to the one Maddie was dealing with. She is on the line with somebody who, according to Sue Blevins, who comes over to kind of try and deal mm-hmm. with the situation, the guy has not talked to her in like 20 minutes, and his car was mm-hmm. filling up with water. So, like, clearly the guy has drowned, but the line is still open. And Linda, obviously, like, kind of traumatized by this call, is saying, like, no, like, it's our policy to never hang up on a call where the line is still open. But Sue just kind of hangs up for her, because she's like, mm-hmm. you know, there are a lot of people who need your help right now. You've got to move on to the next call. And mm-hmm. Sue comes over to Maddie, and Maddie's like, I never thought I would see you hang up on a call. But Sue is like, you know, these modern cell phones, like, sometimes they're so waterproof that sometimes they can stay on the line even a long time after being submerged.
Water-resistant phones turned Sue Blevins, the greatest dispatch boss to ever live, into Gloria.
I knew you were going to say now, it.
Running after somebody. Sue.
It doesn't really work the same.
You're on the run now. No, it doesn't. But yeah, she says to Maddie.
She mentions Maddie's hospital training, and she's like, I need you to help triage, not the calls, but the dispatchers. Like, I need you to manage them and make sure they're doing okay and make sure they're helping out where they're needed and, like, moving on from calls where they're not needed. And, you know, mm-hmm. be the bad cop sometimes, the way I was just doing to Linda. So that's what Maddie is set up to be doing in this episode.
Yeah. And it's like, it's nice. It's like Maddie's nursing skills come back into the fold again. Mm-hmm. I really love it when they do crossover with, like, Maddie's medical past with her mm-hmm. dispatcher-ness of today. and I love them. This is such a good, like, moment for Sue and Maddie. They have such a wholesome relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We go from that to, okay, so I know I shouldn't do this, but whenever Bobby comes on screen now, I just, like, think to myself, man, RIP. Legend.
Yeah.
Legend.
It does change the experience a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm trying to just live in the moment. I'm like, you know what? Bobby is alive in this moment, in these mm-hmm. episodes. But yeah, the 118.
They're on the boat.
The 118 are on a boat.
I'm on a boat. Cue Lonely Island.
They are traveling through the water looking for survivors. They're, like, red tagging people. They're finding a lot of dead people. But they find the wedding boat from the pier, which has also, like, washed into the streets of LA, the flooded streets. And it turns out, okay, Grey's Anatomy Season 2, Episode 6, Into You Like a Train moment.
Oh my god, because, I knew you were going to say that.
Because, I mean, obviously, I knew both of us were going to say it.
Yeah.
But the son and the stepdad of this situation have been impaled on the same pole. not to be confused with Impaled on the same pale. So we've got a little problem here. We've got, like, on the one hand, it's like when South Park used to make that joke about, like, oh, The Simpsons did it, because, like, The Simpsons has been on for so long. It's like Grey's Anatomy has been on for so long that, yeah, pretty much any, like, kooky medical scenario on a show like this will have been done before by Grey's Anatomy. But this one is pretty specific, you know, and also very famous for having been featured on Grey's Anatomy. So it feels like a more direct comparison.
Yeah, but these guys, they're into you like an antenna. It's the antenna from the radio tower that somehow got lodged inside them. And the kids
it's like going through them and then going into the bottom of the boat. So not only are they like connected by this pole, but they're also stuck because you know, they're trapped by the by the pole pinning them to the boat.
Yeah. And the kid seems to be in better shape than Daddy. It seems like from Hen's calculations, it seems to have missed his heart and his liver and his lungs and all that stuff. So he got very lucky. Stepdad seems to be more of a medical unknown. And so they have to be very, very careful about how they remove them. Their best option right now is to unstick them by actually, because they have a bit of distance between them, instead of like moving them off of the pole. Because they're not in ER, right? They will take the buzz saw and cut through the pole with them still on it between them, while keeping it intact and unmoved inside their bodies. It's going to be a crazy and dangerous procedure, but it's basically the only way to get them out of it alive.
And finally, Bobby realizes that the best way to do this is to actually scuba dive underneath the boat and cut the guy out underwater, which is crazy. So we cut to Bobby, like, putting on scuba gear. I guess the guys are like, I guess the situation isn't so urgent that they don't have time to let Bobby do all this.
They make a reference that I know you probably noticed and have something to say about, which is Bobby's putting on his scuba gear and Jim goes, you know, I love Jacques Cocteau as a kid. And Bobby goes, me too.
Jacques Cousteau.
Oh, I thought they meant Jacques Cocteau. I'm like, what do they mean by that? Did he make a scuba movie? Okay, so it's Jacques Cousteau, not Jean Cocteau, or Jacques Cocteau. I mean.
Yes, and I think Cocteau, the filmmaker, was Jean Cocteau.
Well, then why did I even write it down?
Well, they do sound kind of similar. Like, I get
Jean Cousteau. No, he was the subject of that movie about his life, right? Because he was the French diver, and there was a whole Okay, I remember because we watched this in school as well.
Oh, is he what The Life Aquatic is about? No,
that's about Steve Zissou, played by Jeff Goldblum.
Hey guys, editor's note. I believe Ryan meant to say Bill Murray. What movie is about him?
It's like a romantic biopic is the best way that I could put it.
Okay, it says The Life Aquatic was based on him.
What?
Yeah, like it's a fictional character, but it was inspired by Jacques Cousteau. I knew he looked the same.
Wait, but isn't it Jean Cousteau?
No, it's Jacques Cousteau. The director is Jean Cocteau.
So his name is Jacques Cousteau, but then he has a father named Jean Cousteau, who is also an oceanic explorer.
Listen, most French people just have the same, like, five names, and that is confusing.
I watched something else.
Are you thinking of The Diving Bell and the Butterfly? I don't remember if that's literally about a diver, but I've seen that movie. It's a pretty famous movie. And that's, it's based on a memoir of a journalist. Is that what you're thinking of?
No.
Okay. So that's just another French movie based on a guy named Jean or Jacques that also has diving, at least in the title.
Okay,
this is such a confused and messy tangent we're going on.
If any of our listeners have ever seen an aquatic film starring a French man named Jean or Jacques, please leave a comment because I watched it in school and I don't know what it's called. And now this is going to bother me for like the rest of the day. But they both loved Jacques Cousteau as kids.
And for all we know, maybe they also loved Jean Cocteau.
Maybe they did. Maybe they saw La Belle et la Bête in like a black and white theater or a drive-in somewhere. And they're like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. But as Bobby is under the waves, a second wave has hit Los Angeles.
yep.
There's a, I guess you could call it maybe like an aftertide when
it's
like you get a sudden.
They call it a second surge. I guess this is a thing that can happen during a tsunami. It's a second surge, and it's like not as big as the first one, but you know, it floods more water into the situation. So Bobby mm-hmm. doesn't seem too hampered
the situation,
by it under
the
water.
Situation, yo, the situation is on the scene. The situation. We're on the shore, okay. Jersey Shore.
Yeah, no, I know. But the wave, the second surge results in more water starting to flood the boat more rapidly. So that kind of throws a wrench into things, throws a wave into things.
But we don't have a lot of time to sit with that because back uptown, Athena Grant is off duty.
And she is dealing, she's doing the classic Athena thing where she very much like takes charge of the situation and starts yelling things like, everybody move over here and remain mm-hmm. calm.
Angela Bassett is getting her big acting scene in this moment.
Exactly. And this is the part where you have like the annoying yuppie guy. He's like complaining about insurance and stuff. He's like trying to get Athena, because he's heard that Athena is a cop, he's trying to get her to, like, you know, get the lady who crashed into him in trouble, even though obviously yeah. that's not the priority on this scene right now. So Athena kind of mm-hmm. waves him off, and then she encourages everybody to work together and help each other. She's like, we need to come together in this moment, not have divides. And she finds a woman in a car nearby who's bleeding badly from her neck, and mm-hmm. Athena needs to, like, go try and get help or help somebody else. So she has May come and stay there with this woman and put pressure on the wound.
I just gotta say, first of all, this woman, like, when she's bleeding out in, like, the front seat of this car, I was getting, like, major, like, flashbacks to, like, Julianne Moore in, like, Children of Men. And so I, like, yeah. I literally had a moment where, like, I thought, like, is that Julianne Moore? Like, it's not. They didn't get Julianne Moore to be, like, a one-off woman who dies but then doesn't. Sorry, spoilers.
I would love if they could get some, like, random really famous guest stars on this show, because very occasionally you get examples of this. There's, like, a recent season of Grey's Anatomy where Beanie Feldstein randomly plays a guest role in an episode, and the reason that they got this, like, pretty famous actress to randomly do a role is that she was just a big fan of Grey's Anatomy and kind of approached them and asked if she could be on the show. So
oh, that's sweet. That's so sweet.
I think, yeah, we've got to find, like, I mean, Adele is one, but I'm sure she's mm-hmm. not the only celebrity out there who watches 911. So I think they should just start figuring out who their celebrity fans are and, like, getting them in for random cameos. They could start with Adele. Imagine, like, you know, season 9 opens with, like, Adele is, like, uh-huh. you know, accidentally got super glued to her toilet or some crazy uh-huh. thing that would happen on 911.
And there's, like, they have to get, like, some paramedics on the scene. And what do you know, like, Sarah Paulson and, like, pops out with, like, I don't, like, Mahershala Ali. And they, like, have to get her off the toilet. And it's like, what is going on?
And then it all turns out to be a dream sequence. It's like a stress right. dream from Buck mm-hmm. or something. Or, like, new Captain Hen.
And then he wakes up in Eddie's bed. Right, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But Vicky's leg, her name is Vicky, by the way, is pinned yes. by the steering wheel. And mm-hmm. her neck is, like, fucked because, like, there's this, like, shard of glass on this, like, you know how cars have those, like, anyways.
Glass in them?
Right. And it fucked up her neck, but her artery isn't severed. It seems like it's not, like, gushing blood when she takes, like, the thing off of it. It's just, like, a steady, like aching bleed. And so she mm-hmm. has May come into the van and hold the thing down. May is very reluctant because she's like, this is gross. I'm a teenager.
She's like, I'm 17. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to do this.
And she's wearing this white hoodie. Like, that was the wrong day to wear the white hoodie because you're never going to get
you
that
picked
out.
The wrong day to wear a white hoodie.
Hey, you know, a little club soda is all it takes. But as this is happening, she leaves May in the van to hold it down. And as I said before, the sewer starts to flood and back up. It's icky, it's gross, and it gets everywhere on the road. And oh, what did that first person crash into? A transformer. So yeah. The minute the sewage starts to, like, seep onto the road.
The suet bird feeder.
It makes it over to, as water often does, it seeps over to where the transformer is downed on the road. And an electric current is formed. Athena yells at everyone to, like, you know, like, get on the cars, get off the road, whatever. The yuppie asshole is still, like, you know, bitching about something. And so he goes to step forward onto the road and gets fucking shocked. It is delicious.
He gets electrocuted, foaming at the mouth. Yeah, I was thinking that too. I was like, not that this random guy necessarily deserved to die, but it is one of those great, like, mean horror movie moments where just, like, the annoying guy gets it. I've been rewatching the Final Destination movies because I'm excited for the new one. And it feels very Final Destination, like just some random asshole guy gets horribly electrocuted.
Yeah. Gennaro just got ate by the T-Rex. Yep. And May, like, she's like, hears the commotion. She's like going out to, like, you know, see what's what. And Athena yells at her to stay in that van.
Thankfully, she listens.
This is like a, like, sort of a big moment for May where she's starting to, like, understand what, like, people have to go through. And this is, like, kind of like an emotional, like, turning point for her character a little bit. Sort of that's communicated by, like, I do think, I will say her actress, I can't remember her actress's name off the top of my head. But I do think she does an excellent job in this episode. Like, there are, like, some, like, there are, like, itty-bitty moments where I feel like it's slipping a little bit into, like, the Disney Channel mode. But then she, like, snaps right back out of it and gives a very compelling performance. I thought it was well done.
Well, yeah, I think May's actress has an interesting trajectory on the show. Maybe we've talked about this before, but, you know, her being a child actress and then kind of growing up on the show. I remember when I first watched season one thinking, like, oh, I don't know if this child actress is that strong, which, like, no offense at all. Like, a lot of I like, don't judge child actors really on real acting merits, like, at all, because they're kids. But then I feel like as she gets older on the show, you see her, like, actually come into her own as an actress and, like, improve visibly. And so I think, this is one of the first arcs where you're like, oh, she can, like, really act now. So, I agree. I think she does a great job in this episode.
No time to dwell on that, because back on the boat, Lonely Island, Hen says that they got to do CPR underwater in order to keep this guy from drowning.
And 1980s action movie version of Eddie also would say at this point, this is going to be one long day. Or something along those lines.
They put, like, a scuba mask on him, basically, because, like, his heart stops and everything. So is he off the antenna at this point?
No, the antenna is still very much attached. They have cut off, they've gotten the sun out at this point, I think. They've, like, cut the section of like, antenna that was, you know, connecting them. They've cut that and gotten the sun out of there. And now it's just the dad, the stepdad is pinned.
So in order to do CPR, they have to push him down further onto the antenna?
I think what it is...
possibly, like, ruining his body from the inside more?
Well, I think what it is for some reason they have to have him fully submerged. Maybe it's, like, a density thing, like a, like, maybe they just can't get good... I think it's, they have to have him lying completely flat, so they have
in order to do
compressions,
So,
yeah, I guess they just decide to take the risk. It's like, you know, Eddie says at one point, he's like, well, how will he get air? And Hen's like, he's not breathing anyway. So you kind of assume, like, even if it does cause more damage, it's like, what does he have to lose at this point?
This was, like, low-key to me, like, the clumsiest part of the episode, just in execution. Because, like, this was, like the one moment where I wasn't entirely sure of what was going on. And that might just be on me. But, like, I was a little confused on, like, the reasoning for things. And I get it. It's an emergency. They don't have time to explain things. But normally the show is really good about, like, explaining exactly what they have to do in this set of like time, you know. So this is, like, the one moment where I'm like, I'm you're losing me a little bit. But
this is probably the one call, like, with the most kind of blurry details in general.
But, you know, it doesn't last that long.
And may I just say, you know, respectfully, I thought Eddie looked really cute with his, like, wet short hair.
Yeah,
I just liked it.
That's baby girl. But they push him down further onto the pole to do CPR with a scuba mask on his face. And it works. Bobby gets the antenna unstuck and they're able to bring him out and resuscitate him. And he lives.
He lives.
The damn old man lives long enough to get to the ER. Now get back to work.
Literally. Chimney says that, you know, Command is asking for help at the pier. So immediately the 118 has to move right back out, which they do. And then we go back to Athena at the car accident scene. Mm-hmm. Athena finally gets a hold of 911 and she hears that, like, help is not coming, essentially. Like, no one's mm-hmm. available nearby for, like, at least an hour or something. So she's asking, like, can anyone, you know, can you get, like, a black and white or something? Like, we just need mm-hmm. to turn the power off. Funny detail, she's on the line with, like, a random mail dispatcher that we see from time to time, but I don't know his name off the top of my head. And mm-hmm. the captions on Hulu referred to him as Josh. It said, like, Josh, colon, and then, like, his line. But it definitely was not Josh. It was just a fully different man. I was like, come on, captioner. Like, put in a little effort.
I don't think we even see Brian this episode.
He's not in this one, weirdly enough.
Yeah, he's not in. Maybe he just, like, this is his day off. He's at home chilling.
Yeah, maybe he was busy podcasting or something.
Yeah, I hope he wasn't. Oh, I hope he doesn't live downtown. Ooh, that'd be bad. No, I see Josh. Okay. Here's my headcanon for Josh. He has a side business that is very lucrative. He works as a dispatcher, not only to keep up appearances, but also because he genuinely feels like a sense of helping people. But mm-hmm. he has a side venture that is very lucrative. And so he has a home in Beverly Hills. And when the day is done, he goes back to his cliffside mansion, kicks his feet up, watches Housewives on the big wall-mounted plasma and just relaxes. He just chills. He has a glass of rosé. He goes down into his little hot tub or his little infinity uh-huh. pool, whatever he's got there, and he just lives life to the fullest.
That would be a crazy lore drop if we found out that Josh is rich. Just randomly very wealthy and lives in a mansion. That would be kind of compelling because we've never seen his house.
No, never. We don't know anything about his internal world other than that one time he got gay-bashed on a date.
Yeah.
The one date he ever goes on. Sadness.
Anyway, we cut back to May in the car with Vicky. She's like trying to kind of be tough for her and like get her to hold on and stay awake. But and this is clearly kind of foreshadowing, like, dispatcher May, seemingly, you know, this is her first brush with, like, being in a high pressure situation like this. Mm-hmm. And Athena finally does manage to get someone to come shut off the power, like maybe a maintenance worker or something, it looks like. And, you know, so she gets through the water. She comes back to May and Vicky appears to have died. You know, May is just kind of holding on to her. She's like got the tears on her face. She's like, I tried to keep her awake. And Athena gets her out of there. But May is clearly like despondent.
Can I just say, They get, like, a city electrician over here to shut off the power. And, like, all we see him do is flip a switch.
Yeah.
So I don't buy that, like, they needed a city official. Like, they're like, oh, we can't break protocol.
Right. Like could they not have just, like, given instructions on the phone?
Someone could have flipped the switch, right? Like,
maybe it's like a liability. Like, if they had done it wrong, then the city could get sued.
People are dying. People are dying. Like,
I know.
But yeah, it seems like Vicky's dead. Wow, someone should write a college essay about this.
The fire trucks finally show up and, you know, mm-hmm. some paramedics get out. They, you know, behind Athena and May, who are walking away, they start to get Vicky out. And somebody's like, I've got a pulse. And
Diva,
you know, Vicky
up!
Is in fact
Diva up.
Diva up. Vicky is in fact alive. And, you know, May sees this and she just like breaks down in Athena's arms. It's, you know, she's there's all this adrenaline. It's crazy, crazy emotions you would be feeling in this situation. But, you know, May had this wild experience that is surely going to be very formative.
Yeah. And it is wonderful. Very beautiful mother-daughter bonding moment. They can like look back like three Christmases from now. Like, oh, remember that time we did that? Like,
remember when I was just covered in that lady's blood and I thought she was dead, but then she wasn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's those heartwarming memories.
And then Athena like turns to Michael and says like, oh, you know, I've never been more proud of my daughter. She like, you know, she really saved the day in that moment. And it's like, oh, Vicky lives. Everyone else lives except for yuppie asshole. And back at dispatch.
And Jonas.
Oh, and Jonas. And presumably the 5,000 other people to start. But we'll get to that. Because back at the dispatch, Linda's doing better. Okay, she gets back to work. And Maddie's running triage. Maddie says, hey, this guy seems like he needs to be taken over. She's like, I'm on it. And who should call Maddie at work for a little red tape shortcut but her loving husband, Chimney Han?
Yeah, they're not literally married yet, but, you know, symbolically, her loving husband, he mm-hmm. is looking for hospitals to send patients. Like, all the hospitals are full up. They are not really, you know, nobody's really sure where to send people at this point. Chimney, like, accidentally insults Maddie because he says something about, like, whoever's running this system is doing a terrible job. And Maddie's like, that would be me. And then mm-hmm. he's like, I mean, they're doing a great job under the circumstances or something.
A horribly amazing job, given the extremely right. difficult circumstances.
Yeah. Right? So, but Maddie gets an idea. She's like, you know, what we really need is a field hospital. And she realizes that there's a nearby VA hospital and it's mm-hmm. been shut down recently. But they're like, OK, we can probably get someone on the phone to like get this up and running. So that's their idea. They're going to get the VA hospital back in working order. And when they kind of start checking in about how they're doing, Maddie says that she's weirdly grateful that Buck is out of commission with his blood clot mm-hmm. problem because he isn't anywhere near all of this. And it's yeah. like, oh, Maddie. You know, smash cut to Buck very much in the middle of all of this.
And they're playing I Spy.
Yeah, he and Christopher are playing I Spy.
It's so sweet. And honestly, like, weirdly, a great place to play I Spy. Like,
yeah, there is a lot of random shit floating by.
Yeah, you just have, like, everything at your disposal. It's, like, it's better than Times Square for Where's Waldo. Like, this is...
Yeah.
And Chris is doing a great job at this. He inspires Buck because, like, Buck tells him, like, you know, I had a rough week at work and I couldn't get out of bed for a while. And mm-hmm. but seeing you here taking this all in stride, it's like, oh, so sweet.
Yeah, he has a funny line where he says, like, you're still smiling, busting a gut. It's like, okay, 27-year-old man who says things like that.
And he asks him, you know, how he does that. And Christopher says, he says something along the lines of, like, I just keep swimming. I'm just thinking to myself, just keep swimming. Buck says, like Dory? Like, yeah, like Dory. Just keep swimming. And I wrote in my notes, I hate you, Colleen Hoover.
Oh, is that like a thing in one of her books?
In It Ends With Us of lawsuit fame. We stand with Blake Lively. We love Blake Lively.
Mm-hmm, 100%.
There is Lily Blossom Bloom, the main character whose first name is Lily and last name is Bloom and middle name is Blossom and her full name is Lily Blossom Bloom and runs a flower shop.
One of the names of all time.
One of the names of all time. Whenever she's going through something horrible and traumatic, she reminds herself of Dory in the movie Finding Nemo and the comfort she found in that. And she thinks to herself, just keep swimming. Just keep swimming as, like, really traumatic shit is happening to her. Just keep swimming. And, like, the framing device for the novel is that she's writing fan letters to Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, I have heard about this. And that was such a, like, aged poorly thing to put into a book. I just looked it up and that book was published in 2016, which means, yeah. first of all, that means 911 is copying Colleen Hoover, not the other way around. Because, of course, this reference is clearly a veiled reference to Colleen Hoover. But mm-hmm. also, you know, obviously that was pre-Ellen cancellation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's unfortunate. But I feel like even before the Ellen cancellation, that's just still a stupid framing device for a book.
So stupid. Like, in order to provide a framing device about why I'm telling you my life story, I'm writing fan letters to Ellen DeGeneres because I found, like, such comfort in her portrayal of Dory from Finding Nemo.
It's like writing fan letters to, like, Jimmy Fallon. It's just not, like, a glamorous, famous person to be writing letters to. In a book, you know, it's not very literary.
Anyways, as they're eye spying and just keep swimming, a dead body starts to float downstream.
It's like a whole little, like, island of dead bodies. And, you know, the people on the truck yeah. start to notice, and Buck notices. And so he kind of lifts up Christopher, you know, yeah. plants him firmly facing away from this thing and starts distracting him, like, doing more I Spy, like, up in the air, like, away from all this stuff.
Which certainly won't cause problems later. Facing away from the bodies so that he just keeps swimming and doesn't have to see dead people. Right.
It's a very harrowing moment. And I mean, it shows like Buck's dedication to protecting Christopher, like not just physically, but like emotionally. Mm-hmm. He's trying to kind of shield him from the harrowing nature of this event.
Yeah, that's Mom.
That's Mom. Oh, my God. But we go back to the dispatch and Sue is telling Maddie that the VA hospital is a go. She's like, great news. And then still kind of cheerily, she tells Maddie like, oh, yeah, get the coroner on the phone and tell him we need to send body bags to the VA. 5,000 to start.
Yeah.
And, you know, Maddie seems pretty appalled at that. And yeah, that is...
I will say, when they were talking about the hospitals and, like, the 5,000 body bags to the VA and all these stats and everything and, like, how overwhelmed they were, I couldn't help but think about what if there was, like, a show, right, that was, like, all about this, like, swamped hospital that with like 15 episodes that took place over the course of, like, a single shift, and it was, like, the craziest shift ever. I feel like that would make really compelling TV, but then I feel like Jane would disagree with me on that.
Okay, so... come on.
So,
did we even leave the pit tangent in our episode?
I forget.
I think we cut it out, right?
Yeah, I would have to re-listen to our episodes in order to know, and I don't.
So I think you're referencing a thing that nobody even has context for.
I loved the pit. Jane thought it was fine.
I didn't like dislike it. I just thought it was slightly overhyped.
Yeah, which is fair. Okay. The hype was real. But it also seems to have like died down. Like, I don't really hear anyone talking about the pit
anymore.
It
doesn't seem to have a lot of legs. No offense to the pit dumb. The pit fandom.
It had its moment. I would love like a pit spinoff specifically set in 2019 with like the greater like LA area hospitals swamped with like the tsunami refugees and like casualties.
I have always thought if they ever want to do a 911 spinoff that's not just like the exact same premise in a new city, I've always thought they could do a hospital spinoff of 911 that's sort of like the after show where we see the people arriving at the hospital. I don't know. I think
that would be great.
If you really workshopped it, like the concept, I feel like you could have an interesting concept there, whether it's like exploring more of like the character dynamics of like people who have been in horrible accidents, or if it's just like kind of a Grey's Anatomy thing where the draw is just like the aftermath of these crazy accidents. I don't know, like continuity wise, that could be interesting.
I mean, there would definitely be some producers and like some TV people that would be like up in arms about that, because you're kind of reverse engineering a Grey's Anatomy Station 19 situation. But like I think it would be really cool.
But I mean, they have that void now that Station 19 is gone.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. And like, I feel like the like 911 would be such like so ripe for that, especially like in its prime. It would have been so ripe for that with all of like, that would have been cool. Ugh.
Like a true companion show.
It would have been like Untucked, but for 911. Yeah, I would have liked that. But I guess that's for the fanfic.
Yeah, maybe the time has passed now.
Yeah, but that could work in like a different city. Seattle, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
But then sort of from the 5,000 body bags moment, we go back to, you know, what's better than this? Just some dudes and the open ocean.
The 118 are arriving at the pier on a little motorboat, and they're specifically arriving at a flooded Ferris wheel from the pier. There's like a Ferris wheel that's kind of been, of course, knocked off of its, you know, foundations, presumably. And like the bottom half of it is in the water, and then we have all these people trapped on the top half of it.
We're using the term arrived at the pier very loosely. There is no pier to be found.
It's kind of just the open ocean, but you know what I mean. The place, the artist formerly known as the pier.
The artist formerly known as Santa Monica. And we get to the Ferris wheel, and people are, this is so nice. People are cheering as like the 118 arrives. It's very nice because, you know, their lives are in danger.
Can I just highlight a very funny exchange between Bobby and Eddie, where Eddie says to him, "You seeing this, Cap?" Bobby says, "Kind of hard not to, Eddie." I was like,
idiot.
Yeah, get him for me, Bobby. That was a stupid ass thing to say. like, oh my you God. Seeing this? Yeah, I'm seeing the giant fucking Ferris wheel in the middle of the fucking ocean that we're approaching right now, Eddie. Yeah, thank you.
If Bobby wanted to add a little extra sass in there, he could have gone, like, take a picture, it'll last longer. Eddie takes that literally, like, takes out his phone. But then Lena Bosco is on the scene.
Eddie starts talking in Spanish to a nearby family. And they're like, yeah, we're okay. We got saved by La Bombera. Sorry, I didn't roll the R. I'm bad at that.
La Bombera.
But thank you. And Bobby's like, what did they say? And Eddie's like, La Bombera, like the fire lady. Of course, Bombera means female firefighter. Mm-hmm. And we look up and Lena Bosco is there. Mm-hmm. Ronda Rousey herself. And, you know, she's not really in this episode much, but we will see more of her in the next episode. And that's kind of a fun introduction of, like, epic hero woman on top of a Ferris wheel.
A good way to do it. A good way to do it. It's a very short moment that we'll expand on next time, because we go back to Buck and Christopher and sort of, like, Buck wonders aloud, you know, what am I going to tell Eddie? You know, what am I going to tell your dad when I see him?
He says, I don't know what I'm going to tell your father, which is so married coded again.
It is. But that's like also divorce coded, isn't it? Because, like, what am I going to tell your father, you know,
right?
When I see him, like, at like
your father's going to nag me for taking you out to the pier today on the day of the tsunami.
Like 3 days later when he picks him up for like his days and his time, mm-hmm. his court appointed time or whatever.
But Buck and Chris are together. We kind of just cut right away from that back to the dispatch, right? And mm-hmm. They get a warning for another surge, another wave. And Maddie's like, no, not another wave. But Sue's like, it's the same wave. It's now going back out to sea, which I guess makes sense. But like, man, that sucks. Like, just when you think it's over.
This is like if like out of the South Tower flew the 737 to go back to the airport from which it came. Like, taking everyone inside with it.
This is like an inappropriate amount of 9/11 references in this episode.
I'm sorry, we're American. Like, this is our biggest reference point.
Yeah, and you're a New Yorker, so if anything, you have a right. And also, mm-hmm. I say all this as if we didn't go on that insane tangent that one time about how season 9, episode 11 should be a 9/11 themed episode.
Where the bees come back to land the plane safely.
Oh, yeah.
And shake his hand. I think about it all the time.
But back with Buck and Chris, Buck sees the next wave coming and we go to the Ferris wheel and the Ferris wheel like starts rocking back and forth. They're getting hit by the wave. You know, we're kind of cutting rapidly between these scenes. We see people falling off the fire truck.
The tide is pulling out very rapidly. People are like, more people are getting sucked into the fire truck and hitting it. It's more debris is hitting it, getting rocked from its foundation. Buck goes to try and help people, but he can't. And then he gets back. Some guy gets caught on the hose and like like fished out into the ocean. What should happen? What should happen? A seismic shift sends Christopher overboard. We don't see it happen. Yeah. He just gets back and Christopher's not there.
I think we do see it happen, actually.
Buck
leaves Chris for a second to help the other survivors and the truck does like shift and we see Chris fall off the side, but we don't see what becomes of him. All we know is that Buck gets back. All we know is that Buck gets back and Christopher is just gone. And of course, epic Oliver Stark acting moment. As he realizes Chris has disappeared, he just starts like wailing. He's like high pitched yelling Christopher's name. It's as if like his own baby from his own womb, you know, has been yanked out of his own womb, which is basically what happens in this scene, if we're being real. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our compliments to the chef, our hats off to Mr. Oliver Stark. It's good stuff.
It's so good. Oh my goodness. I will never get that, like, the high-pitched Christopher screaming out of my head. It's like...
Yeah.
And
I appreciate an actor who really, like, commits to the intensity.
So.
And I think Oliver Stark is definitely one of those actors. Like, I can't believe I sometimes see people questioning his acting quality, because I've always thought of him as one of the strongest on the show, especially considering that he was, like, not a hugely established actor beforehand. Maybe it's the Britishness. I think we discussed that one time on the show, like that British actors tend to be very intense and very like into the craft and stuff. He just always goes for it emotionally. I get that, like, he has a bit of a corny style as Buck, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's just kind of what the character and what the style of show requires. I don't think that's necessarily like an Oliver Stark's acting thing. And then in more intense moments like this, you see him do these really impressive things, I think.
Yeah. Well, what I respect the most about it is that, like, not only is he like, he's not just, you know, being like afraid and like, you know, panicking and yelling for this guy, he's also completely unafraid to like be pathetic mm-hmm. about it. You know, a lot of like these like macho, like dude bro action hero actors, mm-hmm. when they get panicked and they're yelling, they do that like deep gravelly like yell, like Lita, you know, or like Sarah or whatever. And
is that supposed to be Dean?
I guess. I was thinking like, Sylvester Stallone. Probably. And like Oliver, he takes it to where you would actually go, you know, in your voice, in your register, when you're yelling for this child.
For his baby.
And he also, there's this thing like where you hear a word so many times that like you start to hear the individual components of it. And so like he yelled it so much that I started to hear like Chris, Toe, and like break down like the word and the name in my mind, and I'm like, oh wow, interesting. Words are so interesting, aren't they?
For real.
Mm-hmm. But that's the cliffhanger. Where is Christopher?
Yes. Ugh, what a cliffhanger.
Where is Christopher?
Hashtag where is Christopher? Hashtag see me Norman. Am I right?
Hashtag see me Christopher. See me Buck.
See me Buck. I would have been so, like, this would have been so harrowing to watch live at the time. Yeah. Like, your your child character, like a very vulnerable child character, mm-hmm. getting swept, like, not just in a dangerous situation, but such, I mean, like, as far as parent worst nightmares go, I think your child getting swept away in a tsunami, it's got to be up there with only a couple of other things, like, I don't know, a giant eagle swooping down and taking your baby in its beak.
Well, it's that classic scenario, right? Like, if your child is missing.
It is true that, like, anytime a child is missing, that's obviously a big, you know, trigger of fear. But then, specifically, the tsunami is, like, this physical force that just sweeps everything away, you know, mm-hmm. and you have no control. And so for this child, and also like a physically disabled child who maybe doesn't mm-hmm. have like the mobility of any child, is like just so scary to think of like what could become of this person in this tsunami. I don't want to think about it. It's I would be so terrified watching this live.
100%. And like it perfectly sets up Buck's like spiral, is like descent into madness in the next episode.
Because it's also like, it's one thing if it's your own kid, but if it's a kid you're watching for someone else, like for your best friend, like I'm not saying it's worse than if it was your own kid, but you have that like that oh guilt, fuck, like that, I was responsible for this kid mm-hmm. and now they're gone, like oh god, mm-hmm. like especially someone like Buck who gets so emotionally invested in stuff like this, like if Christopher had like really been gone or died that day, like I don't know if Buck would still be alive.
They perfectly architected his like worst case scenario, his like absolute nightmare.
Not only is he fired, but he lost Christopher.
His professional and personal lives collapse.
Buck's hashtag worst day ever.
This genuinely is his worst day ever. He's had some bad days on the show. This is his worst day ever, possibly of his entire life.
I think this probably is worse than getting his leg crushed under the fire truck, because Buck is like a very selfless mm-hmm. It's interesting because he's kind of selfish and selfless. Like he, I think, thinks about his own experiences of things a lot, but also is very selfless and he is thinking about other people a lot. And, you know, there's that added, like, I think emotionally this is probably worse for him in the moment than the leg crushed by a fire. But, you know, it's not a game of would you rather I would want to play, you know, getting your leg crushed by a fire truck or losing a child in a tsunami.
I feel like you're a loser at the end of the day, like no matter what, right? Like
no matter what. I think it's a pretty lose-lose situation. But that about wraps it up.
That is where it ends. And what an absolute banger. What an event. of an episode.
Very much. You know, so much action. We're really getting storylines on every single character. You know, not everybody's getting like a big emotional storyline, but everybody's involved in the action. And, you know, we'll see more from everybody in the next episode. It's a classic for a reason.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And we'll see you all next week to cover part two. I think it's called The Searchers.
The Searchers, yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of Buck's lowest points emotionally, so that'll be fun. It's always fun to watch him in despair.
And one of the searchiest episodes of the series yet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Although, you could argue that the Maddie kidnapped episode was pretty searchy.
It was pretty searchy. There's some searchy ones so far. But yes, in the meantime, thank you guys for listening. Call to action. Rate us and comment and engage with us on social media.
And you know what else you can do is subscribe to our newly created Patreon, which exists now by the time you will be listening to this. We have our first bonus episode up. It is about the Ryan Guzman masterpiece, The Boy Next Door. So do check it out if you're interested. And now we will wave goodbye. Am I right?
You are.